Hi, this is Adam Baldwin, Jane Cobb from Firefly, and Superman from Superman Doomsday. And you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Welcome, Comic Book Nation. This is Comic Book Central. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. Thanks for joining me here in the lair. It has been a comic booky week here in the Stuber household. Introduced the in-laws to Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man. They, of course, loved the flicks. Getting ready to hit the multiplex to catch the big screen adaptation of Chris Claremont and John Byrne's legendary Marvel tale, Days of Future Past. And I'm still reeling from the season finales of Arrow and Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They were incredible. Don't worry, no spoilers here, but if you missed out on those shows this season, you've got all summer to catch up. Just don't take too long catching up. We've got The Flash, Agent Carter, Gotham, and more on the way this fall. Have I mentioned recently that it's a great time to be a fan of comic book movies and TV shows? Hey, one actor who holds a place of honor with all of us fanboys and fangirls throughout the verse is none other than Firefly star Adam Baldwin. He is my guest today in the lair. Take a listen to this, learn a little bit, and I'll be right back to chat with Adam Baldwin. Adam Baldwin first came to our attention in the 1980 movie My Bodyguard, a quintessential coming-of-age film. Adam played outcast high schooler Ricky Linderman, who was hired by Clifford, played by Chris Makepeace, to be the title character. In this wonderful film, Adam set the stage for many of the characters he would play over the years. Tough, laconic, and a heart of gold. High-profile appearances in Stanley Kubrick's Full Metal Jacket and Chris Carter's classic sci-fi series The X-Files led Adam to one of his biggest and most memorable roles to date, the mercenary Jane Cobb on creator, writer, and executive producer Joss Whedon's brilliant sci-fi western, Firefly. As a crew member of the Firefly-class spaceship Serenity, Jane stole just about everything that wasn't nailed down, including a few scenes from Castle's Nathan Fillion. Adam was even featured in the episode Janestown, where his character, thanks to a wee bit of a misunderstanding after a botched theft, becomes the hero of Canton, a folk hero complete with a statue and a song. Unfortunately, due to some mishandling by the Fox network, Firefly lasted only 14 episodes, but the loyal fan base, known as Browncoats, have kept the show alive through the 2005 film Serenity and the current Dark Horse comic book series. Adam continued his march through genre projects with Stargate SG-1, Angel, animated and video game versions of the Green Lantern, the animated Man of Steel alongside Anne Heche's Lois Lane in Superman Doomsday, and Colonel John Casey, the toughest employee at the Bymore on NBC's Chuck. A recent guest appearance on Fillion's Castle shows that the crew of Serenity is not out of our collective consciousness just yet. Adam is often asked about the future TV or movie adventures of the Firefly crew, and today on Comic Book Central is no exception. Well, he robbed from the rich and he gave to the poor. Stood up to the man, he gave him what for. Our love for him now ain't hard to explain. Let's welcome to the show the hero of Canton, the man they call Jane, Adam Baldwin. Adam, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for being here. We appreciate it. Funniest response you've ever given when someone asked you if you were a Baldwin brother?
Funniest response?
Yes.
I have a pat response. I just say it doesn't bother me because it's a conversation starter.
Have you ever just kind of turned on the Jane snark with them?
In asking them if they've watched Firefly or get off my moon. Yeah, that sort of thing. Get off my moon, I think, is a good one.
We can come up with a couple different pat answers. Hey, before we get to Firefly, Chuck, Superman, all your great genre projects, I have to ask you about a movie of yours that falls into the, no matter how far it is into the film, if it's on, I'm watching category, My Bodyguard. Right out of the gate, you score the terrific role of Ricky Linderman. What was the process that led you into acting and then to that film in particular, your first big role?
I guess performance-wise began, quote-unquote, acting with my brothers when we were kids. You know, we would watch The Three Stooges and act out. I have two older brothers, so the three of us would try to act that out and be goofy with our parents. But We had a good drama program in our school system, north side of Chicago, and I got into it like in fifth grade and have been in it ever since. My bodyguard was a job I got after an audition process in 1979, the summer of 1979, when school was just ending. The production company came to Chicago and was looking for kids. I tried out. I got the job. What are you going to do?
Oh, it's just such a perfect role, too. And it's definitely falls into so many categories, a coming-of-age film, and then you can't talk about 80s movies without talking about that one. I'm guessing you're still asked about that role all the time. It was just so memorable.
It's very heartwarming when people ask me about that because it was very much a life-changing experience. It allowed me an opportunity to step out of childhood into adulthood, the responsibility of actually working and holding down a job. It gave me a career path that I wouldn't have otherwise had. It's such a dicey business. It always has been, always will be, and to have that as your first calling card was a blessing.
Yeah, and we actually got to find out what Ricky was up to, what, almost 30 years later in Drillbit Taylor?
Yeah, right.
Is that Ricky, or is that a variation of Ricky, or what are we looking at there?
Oh, no, that's exactly Ricky Linderman. We... There was actually a question of whether they wanted to use the army coat that I wore in my bodyguard, which I had saved since that show, and because Owen Wilson wanted to wear an army jacket in the show as well. So when we were talking about me doing that little cameo, they said, well, you know, maybe you shouldn't wear that and we could do something else. I said, there's no point in me doing it unless I'm wearing exactly the same thing. So they let me get away with that.
So what we're seeing there, that's the actual jacket.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wow. I have it hanging in my closet right next to the jacket that Nathan gave me on Castle.
Okay. Another brown coat, right?
Yeah, a nice leather brown coat.
But the jacket you wear as Jane is not – it's similar to Ricky's, but was that a kind of an homage?
Yes, it was. You know, I only really wore that, I think, in the pilot episode. Or maybe it came into play in other ones so long ago now. We may have been thinking about it at that time. Or just going through wardrobe and said, yeah, here's a cool one. Let's put some cool patches on it.
You look great in this, if you were to wear this. Oh, that'd be perfect.
All right.
And then as you're going through, boy, just, again, early on in the career, you get to work with Stanley Kubrick.
Yeah,
that's just unbelievable. Now, there's two schools of thought. I'm guessing when you're talking about acting, you know, some directors, you know, you think about Clint Eastwood or maybe even Woody Allen. You know, just get these one takes. You know, just kind of want it fresh. Kubrick, famous for doing, you know, long drawn out production processes and things like that, multiple angles, multiple camera angles, multiple takes. What's your thought because you've worked with a ton of different directors? Is there an impact on your energy level? How does that work? What do you prefer?
It really just depends. Right now, it's so much the process of time is money. And Kubrick had crafted his filmmaking fiefdom in a way so that he could control the time. And he enjoyed the process, and he loved keeping it going as long as possible. Not that there were any purposeful delays. We were also under the gun with weather. We had weather concerns there in England because it was supposed to be Vietnam, and the gray English sky came into play. So we would have to either shoot very early in the morning when the sun was below the cloud deck in the morning, or at the very end of the day, which was preferable because you get that golden light at the end of the day when the cloud when the sun broke under the cloud deck. Then he also used a lot of natural light, fire. He liked fire, but there were times when he would do many takes, and that was just because he could and because he was watching the light change. There were subtle variations in the light from the sun, and he just wanted to see it differently. And there's a wonderful book by Matthew Modine called Full Metal Jacket Diary, which if you see it out there in the world, it tells the tale from the lead actor's perspective, and much of it is true. There were times where Stanley would quote unquote put your in the dirt and make you do it over and over and over again just to see how you would break through to the other side. And then there were times where he'd be happy in one or two takes. Got it, moving on. So a lot of it's urban legend, and you know, some people just aren't prepared. I think Stanley's biggest complaint about actors is that they didn't know their lines.
Well, that's a key component, yeah. That could hold up the process a little bit.
Well, I think it was Spencer Tracy, or it may have been Jimmy Cagney, whose famous Hollywood aphorism is, need to do three things, is hit your mark, say your lines, and mean them. And Kubrick was very much in the mean them frame of mind, so he could tell when you were faking it. So he'd say, do it again, that's terrible. Do it slower. Do it faster. Do it better.
How do you keep your energy level up when things are dragging on, though, as an actor? How do you keep it fresh? How do you make it real?
Coffee. Yeah,
a lot of good coffee on the set of Full Metal Jacket.
They're paying you to do it, but I think one of the benefits that I've had from that is that I'm patient. I learned patience and also to forgive yourself for imperfections. You strive for perfection, but constraints of time don't always allow for it. So thank God for editors.
Yeah, especially when you're dealing with movies like that. I mean, there's just so many components that are coming into. A lot of sci-fi.
You also have to learn when to rest during a shoot. There are times where you're going to have long days. Not like it's digging ditches or mucking out sewers or anything like that, but there are long days where you have to stay focused and concentrated, and you have to step aside and have a quiet space to sit and focus. I think a lot of actors may not do that. I've seen it happen where people they drain their energy out having fun, and sometimes works against you.
Yeah, a lot of sci-fi geek culture type roles in your career. I've read that you're actually a nerd at heart. What was a very young Adam Baldwin interested in? Comic books, movies, television, anything like that?
Shoot 'em up westerns and Clint Eastwood, that sort of movie. My dad used to take me to them, and ice hockey. I played hockey when I was a kid. But then my peer group, their parents started sending them off to hockey camp in Canada, so I couldn't compete anymore because we couldn't afford to go to hockey camp. So when those kids came back, the guys that I used to crush after two seasons at hockey camp in Canada, I was toast. So I moved into the more forcefully into the drama department. But this was in the mid-70s, so things were a little different back then.
Yeah. Have you kind of embraced your inner nerd in the years since then?
Sure, yeah. I don't even really know what the definition of nerd is anymore. It's become so mainstream that it's maybe lost its cachet.
I think you and your cast of characters and your cast of co-stars have sort of helped redefine that with some of these different projects. One of the first ones you got, X-Files, as Noel Rohrer, the tongue-twisting named Noel Rohrer. You came in season 8, about halfway through. That wasn't the role that you originally auditioned for, though, correct?
No, I had originally auditioned for Daggett, and I think I was too tall, or not as or not as good as the other guy. So either way, I ended up doing a good job, and they hired me when that role came about, and that sort of fit my physicality a little more appropriately.
Well, I was going to say, you must have done something right, because they brought you on board for that. What's it like coming into a really heavy... A show that relies so heavily on mythology, and you're coming in so late in the game to that. Everyone, I guess, sort of knows everything about it. What were your thoughts when you first came into the X-Files?
Employment?
Will the check clear?
Well, that's part of it. It's work. Work is good.
Were you an X-Files fan? I mean, did you kind of get a sense of the largeness of the project, or was it just another TV show?
Oh, no, I was aware of it, certainly anybody that knew television was, and I was fortunate that we had Chris Carter at the helm, and he guided us through, and we had a great slate of directors. And, you know, it was a well-oiled machine, and fortunately I had been around long enough to not be intimidated by that. I think guest actors are, it's tough when you walk onto a stage and they have that tight-knit group, where do I fit in? But you just have to remember to take your space, take your time, be prepared, but take your space, take your time, and all will be respected. So,
yeah, it's a very cool character, too. He's one of these characters that doesn't like to stay dead. When you go through sci-fi character that's tough to kill. Was this the role that brought you to the attention of Joss Whedon?
I had no idea where Noel Rohrer was going when I first jumped on it. Maybe they didn't either, but he did get caught up in a magnetite mountain.
Yeah.
The joke was that the super soldier who's allergic, quote unquote, to magnetite didn't have a magnetite detector on him.
it's that one trope.
Perhaps working on that because it was the Fox network that helped me with the network saying yes. I still had to go through the testing process. Still had to get Joss Whedon's yes, and fortunately the audition process went well, and he hired me for a short-lived but loved cult series, Firefly.
Oh, one that we're still talking about all these years later as Jane Cobb, the role for which TV Guide named you Sexiest Newcomer.
Right.
That's a little, you know, you've been working a little bit up until then, right?
Yeah, Sexiest Newcomer at age 40. We love that. Tim Minear still makes jokes about that.
Do you have this framed somewhere? Is this in your office somewhere at all?
Yeah. I have pictures of myself all over my house. My wife loves
the little Jane action figures and.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I got those right here on the mantelpiece, looking at all the visitors who come in and say.
But that TV Guide thing seems like something that would be, you know, that would like just put everything into perspective about Hollywood.
I don't know. I just think it was a fan thing, voting on a nice picture that they happened to take a capture of me that day, and the people that were voting probably had no idea who I was. So they said, "Oh, well, that's a nice picture. He's the sexiest newcomer."
Of course he is. Well, you know what? It's a great role. You talked about getting the role. Describe your first meeting with Joss Whedon, and how you convinced him that, yep, you are Jane Cobb, the hero of Canton.
Well, I just started talking like this, and he liked it, I guess. he had seen some other things that I had been in. He was a fan of Kubrick, and he had seen Full Metal Jacket, and that helped. The material that he had written, it sang to me musically. He's such a great writer, but being someone who grew up with these kind of Westerns and even space Westerns, that mix the poetical writings of Joss Whedon fit my brain, so it wasn't a struggle to spit them out.
You mentioned that you were a fan of like Clint Eastwood movies and Westerns. Did you sort of channel all those movies that were coming back in and put any of that into the character of Jane?
Channel? I stole directly. also Yaphet Kotto character from Alien. You know, there's an old saying, might have been Jack Nicholson who said, or even before him, but he quoted it, the good borrow the great steal.
It's an homage,
Coppola,
right?
Coppola also warned me not to name drop, so I shouldn't do that.
You failed miserably at this task already. But it is kind of cool when you go back and you're watching these episodes and it's like, okay, you know, I know what I would look at, or I know what I'm reminded of, but what's the actor reminded of? And so, because I'm a huge Clint Eastwood fan as well, so it's kind of neat to think about all those movies coming into play, The Man with No Name, and you know, these things coming out, and all of a sudden you're putting that into the character.
Yeah, I was drawn to him as the Eastwood as the lead guy, Man with No Name, and all that. But Dirty Harry was another one. But I thought that Eli Wallach and Jason Robards, guys like that, were the ones that really sang to me, because they didn't have to shave. They could be dirty and sweaty and mean and funny. Just, you know, mean funny to me is what I love to portray, or I call it sniper funny, like in the case of John Casey.
Yeah.
Sniper funny.
Well, and there's a scene in Firefly, too, where, you know, Jubal Early is kind of going through the ship, and you're like, you're thinking there's going to be a confrontation with him and Jane at some point, and you open, you know, and all the weapons are there, and you just wanted to grab the blanket and go to sleep. So, I mean, that, and again, that's the brilliance of Joss Whedon's writing, too, but there's that tough guy funny.
Well, let me tell you the backstory on that. There was a moment when Joss came up to me and said, "So you've seen the script Objects in Space, have you?" And I said, "Yeah, yeah. Excellent." He goes, "You notice you're not in it that much." And I go, "Yeah, yeah, I know." And he goes, "Well, can I tell you why?" I said, "Yes, of course you can." He said, "Well, see, if you were awake, you would kick his ass. So I have to have you somehow incapacitated. So do you mind just being asleep?" And I said, "That's okay. As long as I can have a big drool puddle on my pillow. He said, "Oh, yeah, that's a good idea." So you'll notice there's a huge puddle of drool.
But again, it's like
a little that I like to throw in for characters like that. You can get away with that when he's sort of a slob. It's fun. You can really chew the scenery of a character like that.
But it's very reminiscent of Eli Wallach in that you're stealing the scene. You're coming in and you actually get to steal the scene even though there's not much time there.
That is the goal of any actor, I would think, is to steal the scene.
Mission accomplished in that one. That was pretty great. Speaking of scenes, how do you get through a scene with Nathan Fillion? How do you just get through and just get pages of dialogue done?
Well, Nathan's my pal, and we work very well together. He's a good teacher as far as comedy goes, and I try to be a good straight man to his comedy. And we work well together. And the trick is to not break character, and that's, I don't know, you just try to focus. And see, and when you're working on a set, if the crew is laughing or you're laughing, then it's not funny.
You gotta
make sure that you look around, or it's a warning sign. When the crew is laughing at something, then it's probably over the top for on camera stuff, so you gotta dial it back a bit,
or they're taken out of the moment, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's just a different animal on camera than it is people watching it live. A play is different than a TV show, so you got to dial it back a bit. Timing.
You're working with this cast on Firefly and obviously Serenity as well that seem to be so adept at improv. How do you kind of walk that tightrope of, you know, we want to bring some of our originality into this, we're good at improv, but then Joss's words are so perfect, we don't want to mess with this. How do you walk that tightrope as an actor?
Well, Joss didn't let us improv at all. It was all his words. We didn't have that option when we worked. It was in stone. We had to get it right. We could improv behaviors. We could improv, props and doings to further the words, but his words were law.
What did you bring to the character then personally when you were talking about improving behaviors and things like that? Was there anything that maybe on the page, but that we could see in the episodes?
Jane's always eating. He's always playing with guns or some sort of tool, a knife, some sort of food product, perhaps futzing with a piece of clothing, brushing someone's hair.
He's very tactile.
Yeah. He's always touching things. The little pixie firefly things when he's drugged and is knocked out by Simon in that episode. Oh. What are these little firefly things? These tiny. You know, throw that sort of stuff in. If they let you, if it's not over the top, you got to make sure it's not too broad.
Did you bring that to the role?
And it takes you right out of the reality of a space western.
Right. Did you bring that to the role? Just that type of behavior, just bring, you know, like, I'd like to like have him pick this up, or I'd like to, do, I mean, you kind of, or do you just do it? And then they're like, whoa, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, you have a rehearsal period and then you find it there. My process is I try to be as overly broad and even obnoxiously bad acting in the first couple of rehearsals just to get that out of the way. But sometimes you can find things doing that overly broad stuff in rehearsal that you can use. So you just show the director options. You give them options. And then they can see from the objective eye what works. You have to be willing as an actor to try it.
Pretty good that early on in the series, though, they're trusting you and the rest of the cast to kind of do those things. You don't usually see that in season one of a show.
Yeah. Well, casting's 80% of the battle when you're making a show, and the rest is writing and money.
Well, that third one, I guess, was the issue. You get the script.
We got canceled early, so I don't know if that holds on this one.
They were looking to save the money. They were saving it for the feature film. Of course they were. Now, you get the script for Janestown. What's your reaction?
Oh, I get a statue. Terrific.
And you kept the head of the statue,
and,
right?
And we're shooting where? It's going to be 120 degrees out there. Great.
But it's all you.
Yeah.
It's a Jane-centric episode.
That's true. I was pleasantly surprised I was worried they were going to kill Jane off in the early going, especially when that aerial script hit my desk and I started looking through it. I was like, wait a minute, they're going to space me. So fortunately, I had laid down the groundwork and made the character too lovable for them to do that. I remember when we first had our first dinner together as a cast, Joss reminded us that the show is not called Jane or Mal or Buffy or Angel. It's called Firefly, and we're all expendable.
That was a statement that he proved in the movie, too.
Right. Yeah.
Did you? And you kept the head of the statue, the Jane statue?
Yeah, a bit of overzealous excitement and celebration at the end of that shoot. The extras gathered there, the crowd encouraged me to knock the statue down and take the head. So I did, and I got the call the next day. We need the head back.
Reshoots.
Anyway, I did end up with it overall, and we put it up for a nice auction, and it went to Joss Whedon's charity, so I got away with it.
Oh,
had it not gone to Joss Whedon's charity, I probably would have been in more trouble.
That all worked out. We mentioned the feature film. Pretty rough stuff, and the cast does not come out unscathed. What did you think of the feature film Serenity?
I liked it. I have a couple of things that, I mean, it was the most fun I've ever had working on any show ever, except for the last show that I'm working on, that I'm currently working on, which is a pat answer. They're beautiful people. It was redemption. It was wonderful. I wish that we had had a con character in and amongst the Reavers. I think that would have been helpful, but time constraints didn't allow for that, I guess.
And you got to put a period at the end of the sentence. The cast reunited a couple years ago for the 10th anniversary. Joss Whedon said, the story is alive. I have to ask the obligatory question, in 2014, how alive is the story?
Well, that's a Joss Whedon question. You know, it's up to him. He did say that he said this publicly, I believe. He said that he's concerned about trying to do it again because he's worried that he'd screw it up, and it's already such a beautiful thing that sits there kind of like this shining city, Camelot on a hill, and it's kind of a beautiful thing. Why not just leave it alone? Which doesn't mean there won't be more comic books. I know there are that have been coming out from Dark Horse, and there have been rumblings of perhaps some... I don't know, maybe it seems like a no-brainer to me. I'm just speculating, but and take rumors for what they will, but why not do an animated series? Or why not do even a video game? Why not?
Have you been approached about any of these ancillary projects?
No. It's just rumors and rumblings and no, nothing. There's an old saying in Hollywood, don't believe it till the check clears.
Right. I mean, possibility of a feature film, is the cast, when you guys get to see each other all the time, do you say, like, oh, man, just one more. Let's just get one more shot. Or is it pretty much like, ah, let's leave it?
Never say never.
Little bit. He did say the story is alive. You've read the comic books?
I've read not all of them. I've read almost all of them, almost all of the way through, to quote The Big Picture.
And now,
I love the art. I love the artwork, and I love that they're continuing on the characters. I think that's great.
Oh, Adam Hughes' covers are fantastic, and even the latest one, the latest miniseries, takes place after the movie, so those stories continuing there. I feel like you guys are almost like Fleetwood Mac or the Rolling Stones. Like, you just like have to reunite every 5 years or so to do something.
Yeah, it sounds like you're a fan of the show.
A little bit. Yeah, it was one of those ones that, you know, you watch this thing and you're like, okay, this is perfect. This is going to go for 5, 6, 7 years. And you're like, ah, there's too many stories to be told. Yeah, there's so much backstory to these characters, and they're beloved. That's what kills me is you look at this thing. If it aired now, it probably would still be on the air. You know, there's so many different outlets and Netflix and all these different things. So maybe it was ahead of its time.
Yeah, well, 2020.
There it is. There we go. Chuck, you mentioned Chuck, Agent John Casey, or should I say Alex Coburn? You play grumpy a lot. Are you generally?
What the heck is his real name?
What's that?
What the heck is his real name after all?
Alex Coburn. Well, we think it's Alex Coburn, but you know, who knows?
Hell, I just started calling him Greta at the end.
Well, maybe we'll find out. I mean, they're still talking about this. Executive producer Josh Schwartz, star Zachary Levi, they've mentioned the possibility of a Chuck movie. Again, I have to ask the question, anything out there?
Believe it when the check clears.
As always.
Right now I'm working on it. Right now I've got a current project that's filling my time. So, yeah, it would be down the road if they were going to have any kind of a reuniting thing, including me.
But it's still out there. I mean, there's still some chatter out there, correct?
Yeah, you know, don't believe everything you read on the internet.
Well, this was a show that is amazing to me because what didn't work with Firefly worked with Chuck. The fans saved the show. I mean, I don't think since the original Star Trek series did I see a fan campaign come alive and actually save the show. So, I mean, that's, you had to be thinking at some point when you're shooting Chuck, like each season, like, okay, here we go again. You know, where are we going with this?
Yeah, the fans definitely helped, and it's always a combination of things that continue a series going forward. One of the most important things was that the network really liked the show, regardless of how high or low the ratings were from week to week. The people at the top of the network really liked the show, and especially the studio at Warner Brothers, they wanted to keep it going, so they figured out a way to do it. Subway was a huge help, and the fans that bought all the sandwiches, definitely a huge help.
I bought some sandwiches.
I don't want to diminish the role that they played. However, it doesn't matter how big your fan online campaign to save the show is, if the network or the studio doesn't like the show for whatever reason. If they like it, they'll keep it going. If they don't, they won't.
Well, you guys got a nice final season too to wrap things up. So even if we don't get the Chuck movie, at least we do have a nice little bow at the end of that one. Your comic book themed voiceover work. I have to ask, who is the better Green Lantern, you or your Firefly co-star Nathan Fillion?
I am.
Why?
Unequivocally, a better voice. Better voice quality. Taller. Smarter.
More heroic.
More heroic. Yeah, bigger shoulders.
I love listening to your voiceover because you did the video game as well. I love listening. Somebody posted all of your grunts and all of your line reads on the Green Lantern video game on YouTube. It's hilarious.
Oh, they did? I didn't see that.
Kick the tires and light the fires.
That's funny.
And you get
You know how when you do a video game, it's a different animal than when you do an animated film or cartoon work. Because you're alone in a room doing cues with a remote director from another city over the intercom and an engineer in the booth, and you just run through this list without anyone to play off of. They may give you a reading from someone else, or if they've already captured the other character's voice, they'll give you a lead in, but for the most part, it's just you saying isolated lines. Whereas when you're working in a cartoon or a film, you're in the same room with Anne Hesh, you're doing the same scene, basically. You're playing off of each other.
Yeah, bring that movie up too, Superman Doomsday. This was sort of a more adult take on the Man of Steel, based on the Death of Superman storyline. How familiar were you with that comic book storyline?
Not so much.
Did you know even that Superman had died at one point?
I was enlightened when we started putting it together.
Now, and you got to work with the great Andrea Romano. So this is that. We've talked to Kevin Conroy and a lot of these guys that are in the DC animated universe. You're doing basically a radio play at this point.
Yeah.
So you're working with Anne Hesh. How tough is that to sort of... It's nice that you get to work with the other actors in the room, but you almost have to direct things straight ahead, correct? Into the mic.
You're sitting there, right there, together.
So you're able to interact with them a little bit?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you're not isolated into separate booths. You're all in one big room.
Right, but I didn't know if you had to, like, because I think there's some shots of her, like, recording, and she's, like, trying to look over at you, but then she, like, the microphone's in front of her, so she has to kind of look straight ahead.
Well, that's just camera angles.
Now, were you originally approached for Superman the Animated Series to be the voice of Superman?
I don't recall. Well, Ken's a pal of mine. He's a terrific actor. I'm glad that he did it. You know, when you lose out, I don't even know if I was approached, so they may have gone directly to him. It's funny how they change around, do different guys, let different guys try it out. He was Johnny on the spot, and he got it done, so more power to him.
What was the direction?
I've done Green Lantern once, and Nathan's done Green Lantern, and they jump around and do different ones. That's cool. I have no problem losing out a part to a guy who's a good actor. That's, you know, you root for these guys, been around doing it for a long time. So when one of the nice guys gets your part, you're like, nah, that's okay. He's a nice guy. He's a good actor. That's cool.
You don't have to worry if Nathan's getting it then. You mentioned...
It just means they wanted someone with less broad shoulders.
Do you sort of josh him about this a little bit when you get together?
Yeah, and he gives me shit about my hair, so we're even.
Now, Andrea Romano, you get to work with her. You're playing Superman and you're playing Dark Superman, and she mentioned in the commentary that you didn't record these separately. You're going back and forth with the two roles. How were you able to do that, and why that choice?
Well, that was a fine line to walk. Clark, Dark Superman, Superman, and it was really just sort of a subtle shift in tone that we worked out together. They're not that dissimilar, but they have a different, I guess, weight or gravitas, tonal quality, and we just played around with that till we found that mix.
Is there more of a robotic feature to Dark Superman, where it's just this kind of like one mission, move forward?
He's just meaner.
Is he misunderstood? He's not really a villain. He's kind of like built that way.
He's a victim of circumstance.
Exactly. Other than yourself, who's your favorite Superman?
My favorite Superman?
Live action,
well,
animated.
I'd have to say Christopher Reeve set the bar. I think he had the best cross between humanity, humor, strength, quickness. Such a very, very gifted actor. Tragic loss. He had that horrible freak accident on a horse with an expert rider, and I just, you know, that's his performance as Superman is what really reignited my awareness of it. I used to watch the old TV series, but that was very hokey and corny. And did hokey and corny mean the same thing? Was that redundant? But Christopher Reeve is my answer.
That would be mine as well. Well, you talked about your latest projects. One of the more recent ones, you had an appearance on Castle with Nathan Fillion as Detective Ethan Slaughter. Have we seen the last of Detective Ethan Slaughter?
Unlikely.
Do you Unlikely. Have any specific information?
Again, I'll believe it when the check clears. I would love to step back in there and play a little Slaughter Rule, but we'll see. Working on another show called The Last Ship that may interfere with production timing, so we'll see.
Has Nathan mentioned to you, like, okay, hey, I want this character back. This is going to be really cool to have him back, and I enjoy working
with him. Well, who doesn't want the character back? He's freaking amazing. He does change the tone of the show, though. You can't really have him as a regular, but a one-off per season would be great.
And you get all the Firefly references. There's so many in-jokes that you guys get to do. I mean, what's...
The problem with Slaughter on Castle is that he takes over the show,
and
that would just change the whole dynamic of the show, and you can't have that. But you can have him come and guest for an episode, maybe two, but there's nothing in concrete. I would love to do it, and if there's room to do it and they got an idea for another episode, great. I'm there.
Well, we're looking forward to it, too. You mentioned the new show. What can we look forward to? What's the character? What's the show about?
It's called The Last Ship. It's a Michael Bay production for TNT. It's premiering June 22nd. I play Commander Mike Slattery. He's the executive officer of a Navy guided missile destroyer. The captain of the ship is played by Eric Dane. We have Rona Mitra is a brilliant scientist who's trying to help us track down, create the cure or vaccine for a devastating virus that has infected 80% of humanity and caused mass chaos in the world. So we're not unlike an allegory to Noah's Ark, and we have to save the world.
Do you get to play tough, funny again?
Adam Baldwin always finds his moments. Adam Baldwin always finds his moments for humor when he can, and even in the most dire of circumstances. There's a gallows humor that you must bring at times. You have to be careful you don't do it too much.
We'll see moments of it, but this one's pretty much more of a straightforward action role.
Yes, that's true.
Well, we talked about Firefly, the cast. You had a great ensemble cast on Chuck. You had a great ensemble cast on Firefly as well. You see these folks from Firefly at conventions all the time. You get there. What's that experience like? You guys are rock stars at these things. I mean, how fun is that to just sort of get together with these guys and talk shop and feel the love from the fans?
Again, it goes back to love. We loved what we were doing. We loved the fans that embraced us. We're so happy that so many people found the show even after it was canceled. We're still sad that it went away, but life goes on. Everyone's grown older and wiser and funnier, in my opinion. And we love seeing each other's faces for those short periods of time. It's nice that we have that in our lives. And the one thing that I tried to impart to them, all the younger actors, and besides Ron Glass, of course, is that to appreciate it while it was happening. And I think that's one of the things that made Firefly so special, is that we appreciated it while it was happening. We knew we were at risk, and we embraced every moment and seized the day.
Well, how can
I say that to all the cast members that I meet in any new show? I said that to the guys on Chuck. I've said that to the guys on The Last Ship. It's just part of, you just have to really know that not all shows are like this. Not all shows are going to be big and powerful like The Last Ship or like Chuck or like Firefly or X-Files. There are going to be jobs in between these, and there's going to be downtimes in between these great projects that you're going to miss this. So don't take it for granted. And I think that I've done a good job with keeping people sighted in on that goal.
Well, for all these projects that you don't want to take for granted, that you're enjoying, we want to find out more about those. So how can fans find out more about the world of Adam Baldwin? Website, Facebook, Twitter, where can we find you?
Well, for right now, just go to, just search The Last Ship. Go to TNT, go to their website, go to YouTube. There are wonderful trailers out there, and I'm sure any basketball fan, all you nerd basketball fans, you'll see the promotions for The Last Ship big time on TNT and TBS and affiliated stations. There are wonderful, the promotions department is just great, TNT, better than I've seen certainly during the Firefly.
It always helps to have good promotion and to show the episodes in order, correct?
Yes, it does, yes.
Lesson learned. Well, look, I know you don't like to pick favorites, but if there was one character of yours that you could revisit, which one would it be?
I kind of had mile markers in my life, the first one being my bodyguard, Ricky Linderman, and then, well, there's a little one in DC Cab, but the next one was more so Full Metal Jacket, Animal Mother, and then you fast forward to Jane Cobb and Firefly, Chuck's John Casey, and now Mike Flattery on The Last Ship. If I had to pick one...
Yeah, you gave me the easy answer. I got to hold your feet to the fire. You got if there's one that they said, hey, we're going to make a feature film, or we've got a sweet role and we want to bring this character back.
The only reason I say Jane Cobb is because he was cut short, didn't get to finish the arc of the character. So because... romantically speaking, that's the one I would want to revisit. Plus, he gets to chew the furniture and doesn't have to take a bath. I hate shaving. I hate bathing. And, no, I like to bathe.
And he gets to steal all the scenes from Nathan Fillion. What more do you want?
I bathe at least once a week. And I get to steal scenes from Nathan Fillion. That's always fun.
That's always the best. There's the actor's reward right there. Well, you know what? You've played comic book heroes, sci-fi, and action characters. I can't wait to see what you've got in store for us next. But... just know that to me and to many of our listeners, you will always be the hero of Canton. Adam Baldwin, thank you for joining me on Comic Book Central today.
It was a blast. Take care.
Ah, that's right. Adam is a hockey fan, and I should have known better than to talk smack about my Penguins making the Stanley Cup Finals. Okay, Adam, your Kings are still in it. My Pens are out. Congrats. No problem. I won't talk smack again, at least till next season. I guess I can root for your team since you spent some time in the lair with me today. It was much appreciated. Thanks so much. And I know it wasn't an announcement. I know it's only speculation. I know it's only a rumor. But hey, it's a rumor started by one of the crew of Serenity. Were you as stoked as I was to hear that Adam and possibly others are interested in a Firefly animated series? I know we're interested in it. I am all about that, and I hope it happens. We'll keep you posted on that. And if you're listening to this podcast and you have not seen the series Firefly, then after you've heard the clip at the end of the show, you do realize there are clips at the end of the show, right? After that clip, immediately watch all 14 episodes of Firefly on Netflix or get the DVD or Blu-ray set and enjoy one of the greatest series of all time. You won't be disappointed. While we wait for the next great adventure of the Serenity crew, be sure to learn more about Adam's next adventure by following him on Twitter, at Adam Baldwin. And be sure to check out Adam's new series, The Last Ship, on TNT. The series premiere is June 22nd. That's the same night as the Falling Skies season premiere, featuring last week's guest on Comic Book Central, Doug Jones. Hey, why don't we just call June 22nd Comic Book Central night on TNT? Kick back and watch Adam and Doug do their thing on The Last Ship and Falling Skies. It should be an evening of incredible entertainment. I can't wait. Speaking of great entertainment, you don't want to miss an episode of Comic Book Central. Check us out online at comicbookcentral.net. Stan Lee, The Hulk, Lou Ferrigno, live-action Superman, Dean Cain, Batman, Kevin Conroy, Star Trek's Marina Sirtis and Jonathan Frakes, Thor's Jamie Alexander, and more. So many of your favorite comic book TV and movie talents have stopped by the lair, and so many more have made reservations. The guest list for this summer is amazing. Trust me, you don't want to miss an episode, so be sure to subscribe to the show in iTunes. And hey, while you're there, please rate and review the show in iTunes. It is greatly appreciated. Be sure to hashtag share the lair on Facebook and Twitter, facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork and Twitter at comicbookctrl. And I want to hear from you. Drop me a line and let me know what you think of the show. Tell me what you think about Adam Baldwin, Firefly, Chuck, Serenity, all those different things. joe@comicbookcentral.net. Well, just like Jane Cobb flying away from Canton, I am taking off. That's all the time we have for today. My thanks once again to Adam Baldwin for taking some time to chat with me today. Next week on Comic Book Central, golly, Miss Lane, where would Christopher Reeve's Superman have been without his best pal Jimmy Olsen by his side? The actor who brought Siegel and Schuster's Daily Planet photographer from the comic book page to the big screen, Mark McClure, will be here. Until then, have a fantastic week. Keep reading those comics, and thanks for joining me here in the lair, Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 Unported License. All other content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Looks like your Los Angeles Kings are going to be headed for a showdown with my Pittsburgh Penguins. Care to make any predictions?
Kings versus the Penguins. I don't see that happening. Kings are playing the best right now. They got the best goalie in the game, that's for sure.
Marc-Andre Fleury with back-to-back shutouts, just saying.
Yeah, all right. We'll see.